IVM.
Folks, welcome to Paisa Paisa. I'm your host Anupam Gupta, B50 on Twitter. And today's episode, we've got Capital Float, one of India's largest digital lenders. And we're also going to talk about Walnut, the savings app that Capital Float acquired back in 2018. My guest is Shashank Rishyasinghe, MD and co-founder at Capital Float. Shashank, welcome to Paisa Paisa. Thank you so much for doing this for our listeners.
Thank you, Anupam. Really a pleasure to be on this podcast with you.
Happy to have you guys. Let's start with Capital Float. Just a little bit about the history and how it was founded and the various services that it offers now.
Sure. So Anupam, we started Capital Float, my co-founder Gaurav and I, back in 2013. And I think the real insight that got us excited was how underpenetrated credit was across the country, irrespective of whether you look at SMEs or consumers. And I think as we looked globally, we were amazed by the way technology was starting to really disrupt the traditional financial services space. And the simple question we asked ourselves was, if you can buy something online in India, order a taxi on your phone and book a movie ticket on your phone as well, why can't accessing a loan be just as simple as that? And so that's how we began. And our focus has really been on the retail market in India. I think one of the stats that constantly amazes me is that there are only 30 million unique credit card users in a country of 1 billion people. Whereas if you actually look at a large number of users today across the internet economy, that goes into the hundreds of millions. And so the question that we posed to ourselves was, how do we create new age financial products around credit and other aspects of a person's life that could really target the next 100 to 200 million users in India and effectively give them options to make their life easier and more affordable?
Great. So, Shashank, you mentioned a number out there of 30 million unique credit cards. I want to just go a little bit deeper in that because I believe the total official number is more like 100 million. So, are you saying that the average credit card holder has more than one credit card?
So, two things, Anupam. The first is, yes, that's definitely true, right? I think especially in the prime segment, a lot of folks tend to have more than one credit card. I think the second is we also look at the size of the credit limit, right? So, a lot of people may have a credit card, but the limit is so small that it doesn't really make a meaningful dent in their life. This would be our estimate of the population of people who actually have a meaningful credit limit and use it regularly on cards.
Very interesting. Now, you guys were among the earliest on the scene, and I'm guessing that you guys are a proper NBFC, right? With the license.
That is correct.
Excellent. Tell me from your perspective, from your vantage point, being among the earliest on the scene, and I think now you're also among the largest. How and why has digital lending boomed? I mean, let's just forget the pandemic that happened in the last 1 year because that probably gave it some amount of tailwind. But why do you think digital has just totally taken off? I mean, is it, for example, because banks, NBFCs, credit cards, everyone just refused to look at growing the segment because it was probably a tough prospect to go on the ground and give a credit card or lines of credit to people who are not in the formal, you know, who probably don't have a credit score? Why? So, you know, just give me your perspective into this.
So Anupam, if you look beyond the so-called prime segment in India, right, which today, which historically has been focused, where banks have focused on employees of some of the large MNCs and large companies in the country, the next 100 million users in India have a very different characteristics, right? A large percentage of them are new to credit. A significant percentage would be self-employed, so actually work for themselves as a freelancer or run a small business. And at least 50 to 60% of them would be outside of the large metro cities. And as such, the needs of these segments have actually historically been quite small, right? We're talking about an average income of between 2 to 4 lakhs per annum. And the biggest challenge that traditional banking models have had is being able to actually go into smaller ticket sizes and do them profitably and create experiences which can delight customers at this scale. And I think that's where technology, like it did in many other sectors in the country, really started to chip away at the problem of unmet credit in India. And the first real problem that they were able to solve was that of access, right? If you are living in a smaller town, a tier three, tier four city, maybe you couldn't go to a bank branch, but you could go online and research a financial product and access it within a few clicks. The second thing which players like us did was really take a differentiated approach to underwriting the risk of these customer segments, right? Understanding things like their cash flows, their intent, their online shopping behavior, to get a better insight into a customer who can't just be underwritten on the strength of perhaps his employer or his assets or something like that. And the second problem after access that I think that we've really been trying to solve is the problem of experience, right? The next tier of customers in India typically have not gotten as seamless an experience in accessing financial products and credit as the top, say, 1% of the country. And technology there too has allowed us to be able to, for example, give someone an approval instantly online, allow them to apply for a product with a few pieces of information within a few minutes without any significant paperwork, etc. And I think it's this combination of accessibility and a better user experience that has really opened up this new frontier of credit in India and is starting to see these 100 million customers really come online. I think the second thing that has changed overall is the level of digitization of these customers, right? I think probably 10 years ago, a lot of these customers weren't actively shopping online, weren't on WhatsApp, weren't using net banking or a smartphone. And I think that has completely changed over the last few years with the advent of Jio, UPI, the India Stack, and a whole host of other macro tailwinds. As you said, COVID as well, that has really enabled these customers to come online and by doing so, create a meaningful amount of transaction data that lenders such as ourselves can use to underwrite them for financial products.
Help me understand one thing, Shashank, right? Because since you guys were early on in the scene, you would know how the traditional banks, NBFCs, credit cards would work on, you know, I think the system used to be called files or profiles or something about how when you're assessing a certain person for a loan or for a credit card, you create a file for that person so that you can assess the credit risk. So I want to understand what's changed, right, between the old system and the new one. I want to understand the role of technology, for example, that what would happen in the old way versus what happens now. Maybe you could talk to me in terms of time taken to give a loan. You could talk to me in cost incurred because, you know, at one point of time for a bank to give a credit card, it required probably DSAs, feet on the street, stuff like that. Whereas now I'm assuming that things are much better. So could you just help our listeners, you know, just understand this one perspective of why digital lending has boomed?
Anupam, I think there have been two major changes. The first is that small credit has become simple. And so what I mean by that is, firstly, the process has become completely paperless, right? You would recall from the experience you spoke about that it would typically involve a lot of paperwork, a visit to a branch, various documentation, etc. And I think over the last few years, you've seen many players like ourselves in the ecosystem transform that into a fully digital experience, right? Much like how buying a TV today is a fully one-click experience on an Amazon or a Flipkart. I think with automation and has come speed, right? Today, with a few steps, you're able to actually access a product in a fraction of the time that you used to earlier. Perhaps earlier it could take weeks. Today it takes a few minutes. If I'm a business owner, the problem was even more severe. Right? As an SME, it could take me weeks, if not months, to get a line of credit from a bank. Today, within a few hours, or in some cases, even a few minutes, even a business owner can get a loan of up to, say, 10 lakhs with a few clicks online. So I think credit has become simple, and that has really opened up access. I think the second thing that's very important is credit has become contextual. So earlier, you would have gotten, let's say, probably a few calls a day from a salesperson asking if you wanted a personal loan or a business loan or a credit card. I think what digital lending has done is understand how to offer customers credit at a point where it's relevant to them. And I think Buy Now Pay Later is a great example of this, right? Where customers can actually access credit when they are about to make a shopping decision. And that credit is specifically for them to be able to break up a larger purchase into multiple installments. If I look at the business world, today, credit is offered at the point of sale. So if a customer, if let's say a small SME is receiving a large percentage of his payments through his swipe machine, there and then he could see an offer for a line of credit that he could get against his swipes that he's been clocking on a day-to-day basis. You are seeing a lot of marketplaces like Amazon and others starting to actually embed credit, right? This phenomenon called embedded finance into the customer journey and in partnership with lenders such as ourselves. And what this really allows the ecosystem to do is give credit where credit is due, but also give credit where credit is relevant. And I think that combination of contextual credit and simple credit has really dramatically changed the game for financial product delivery in the country.
Yeah, I hear you here. I mean, we're going to talk about the BNPL now, the buy now, pay later scheme now, because I just thought that let me just check this out, right? Because we were doing this recording and I think somewhere last week or about 10 days ago, I signed up and, on Amazon, and it's, man, it is really smooth. What I just put in my PAN number and that's it. Boom. So yes. Just walk us through. I also tried, when I was buying some stuff on Amazon, it was like 600, 700, 1000 rupee stuff. It gave me that option there when I was checking out and said, buy now, pay later, and just take out here. I was a little bit, scared when it said that it wanted access to my bank account. I think probably for a UPI for paying later. So just tell our listeners, how does this work? Who all are eligible, right? And where all is it available?
Sure. So buy now, pay later is a product that is referred to through many names, both in India and globally, right? Some people call it checkout finance, some people call it EMI financing. But essentially what buy now, pay later is a product to help customers buy online at the point of sale and transform that purchase into credit, all right? Specifically, what I mean by that is be able to spread out a purchase over multiple installments or club a set of purchases into a single bill that is payable at the end of the month, right? It sounds like a very simple idea, but it's actually potentially revolutionary for a few reasons. The first is it introduces an affordability option into the world of e-commerce. If you ever kind of in the recent past gone shopping at an offline store like a Croma or a Vijay Sales, you typically see that there's a person sitting at the reception offering you an EMI option, right? If you want to buy your TV. And they would ask you to fill out a set of forms. And if you were approved, you would have the ability to either spread out that purchase over multiple installments or perhaps buy a slightly better product because you have this installment option. The e-commerce world didn't have that until recently, right? And if you look at especially what's happened since COVID, a larger percentage of Indians are shopping online than ever before. And one of the things that we have seen is actually the share of online shopping went up during COVID and the share of offline shopping went down, and it's still recovering. Mm. And so the first thing that buy now, pay later does is actually bring affordability into the world of e-commerce at the point of sale. And I think that is revolutionary for a country that is leapfrogging physical retail, particularly in smaller towns and cities, and going straight to e-commerce. The second thing that buy now, pay later does is create seamlessness at the point of checkout, right? Today, you may have seen that the failure rates on other instruments like UPI or debit cards or credit cards are actually quite high, right? You have about an 80 to 90% payment success rate on many of these payment options. Buy now, pay later offers a customer a one-click checkout once they're signed up and a payment success rate of over 99%. And so it's also a very simple and seamless experience for the customer, very much in line with what e-commerce is trying to do, right? Simplify the process of shopping. And I think in doing so, you may ask the question, look, it's a very simple process. Is it so simple that the customer doesn't understand what they're getting into, right? And that's a valid question. And we've spent a lot of time ensuring that buy now, pay later does a few things well. And the first is transparency, right? I think the big difference between buy now, pay later and a credit card is in buy now, pay later, you know exactly what you're getting into, right? You know that you're splitting a purchase of, let's say, 20,000 rupees over three installments. You know exactly what you're paying for that service. You know exactly when you need to repay. And in many ways, what we find is that for a newer generation of financial product users, that simplicity is actually much easier than a credit card and understanding the fees and the what happens if you don't pay on time and the hidden charges and all of those things. The other thing buy now, pay later does, right, as a credit product, is it also helps customers build their credit history. So you may be a new to credit customer, but if you go through a regulated buy now, pay later provider such as ourselves, you are doing a KYC, you are actually setting up a record in the bureau. As you repay on BNPL, your bureau record improves, your credit score gets built over time, and you can actually use it as a way to start to build your CIBIL history and be able to access other products over time. So all in all, I think we believe that buy now, pay later is both a great affordability solution. It's seamless. It provides transparency and control over one's finances and also helps one build a credit history over time. And today, buy now, pay later is something that is starting to become available, I think, across the online ecosystem in India. We work with several partners to enable them to offer it to their customers at the point of checkout, Amazon being one of them. You're probably one of our customers now, which we're privileged to be your partner for.
Thank you.
So it is. We believe that it's just literally, in some ways, I would say, ground zero for the potential of this product. And I think you're going to see explosive growth in e-commerce in India over the next few years, driven by this new wave of customers coming online. And buy now, pay later has the opportunity to really be sort of the credit card option of the future for these customers.
Very interesting. Just before, you know, before I go to the next question, help me complete the transaction, right? Because I kind of stopped when it asked me to link the bank account. How does repayment work here?
Sure. So the way repayment works is you typically set up a standing instruction with your primary bank account. This is done through the ENACH infrastructure that the NPCI manages. Once you set up a standing instruction, any repayment, so let's say if you bought something for 20,000 rupees and you're splitting it over 4 months, you would have a 5,000 rupee due, let's say every month. The standing instruction will ensure that 5,000 rupees is paid from your bank account. This is very powerful because it, unlike a credit card, where actually credit cards often benefit from the customer paying late, in this product, we are actually trying to ensure that the customer pays on time, they don't forget about their repayments, they don't need to actually go and make a repayment, and therefore their repayment history remains exactly on track.
Very interesting. Let's get into the terms and conditions and certain nitty-gritty. So the first question I have for you are, there, what kind of interest rates am I looking at? Any penalties out here, like on the date that the ENACH mandate hits my bank, I don't have money? How does that stuff work?
Sure. So typically the way it works is there are both no-cost options and priced options, right? There are no-cost options that are typically subvented by the merchant or the brand or the OEM. These tend to be 0% APR for the customer. There are also priced options, which honestly varies based on the profile of the customer, the underwriting, the risk, etc. But again, these are all transparently displayed. So you will typically see, you can, if you want to make this purchase, you can, let's say there may be a no-cost option for 6 months, there may be a priced option, and here's the interest rate for 6 months as well. It is a credit product, right? I want to emphasize this very importantly. Buy now, pay later, at least the way we do it, is a credit product. So you're being serviced by a regulated entity. You are doing a KYC. You are also setting up a standing instruction so that collections can happen directly from your account, like any credit product. If on that day, your let's say your NACH bounces, you need to make the payment yourself. And we offer an array of different options, UPI, et cetera, to make that payment in case it's an issue. But payment discipline is important, right? And so, and obviously, I think we ensure that if customers have a genuine technical issue of an ENACH didn't fire, we close that ASAP and allow the customer to clear their payment. At the same time, customers who go delinquent are reported into the bureau. That's the flip side of a credit product, right? On the one hand, it helps you build credit history. On the other hand, it also requires a sense of discipline if you want to build that history over time.
It does. Yeah, I totally agree. I think people, I don't know why people have this thing of always pay by debit card, always pay by debit card. And I was like, listen, I mean, you know, you've got this facility, why wouldn't you use it? Anyway, I think that's for a bigger discussion. So taking on from your delinquency point, I want to go into this slightly, you know, call it the dark side or call it the slightly controversial side that's happened in the last few months. I'm sure that you would know of this, that the boom in digital lending has also led to some pretty unfortunate incidents, like the Chinese app scam. So one, what is your perspective on that? Do you think, you know, where do you think the fault lies? And two, for our listeners, precautions, anything that you would warn our listeners to do before they choose a digital lending app? Because, you know, I'm just frightened by the kind of access that these apps take from our smartphones, right? Now, I know that you've got a BNPL product, so it's not like you have an app, or maybe you do, I don't know. Two things, like I said, one question is, what do you think, why this scam happened, and do some precautions for our listeners?
Sure. No, excellent question, Anupam. And it's definitely something that I would say we have been monitoring quite closely, both as a player in this space, but also we are a founding member of an association called the Digital Lenders Association of India. And I think from an industry perspective, this is something that obviously we are quite concerned about and are engaging with various regulatory bodies on. So I'll give you my perspective in a nutshell. Today, there are two types of entities out there offering digital loans. You have the regulated ecosystem, right, which are typically NBFCs or maybe someone who's acting as a BC of a bank or an NBFC. and you have an unregulated app ecosystem. And unfortunately, the unregulated app ecosystem is actually quite large. So I think the first thing, and I think there, obviously, the regulator is working over time to try and clamp down on unregulated entities, but it's sort of an arms race, right? Like, how do you keep up with the proliferation of essentially illegal and scammy apps? And I think some of that has to come from customer education and awareness. So, for example, one of the things we put out as an industry association was a simple guide for customers as to how to spot an unregulated app, right? And there are a few telltale signs. The first is that the lender, you cannot actually understand who is the lender on record. It's very simple in a regulated app to see who is the lender and do a quick check as to whether they are an RBI registered entity or not, right? And actually RBI requires that the name of the registered lender be shown upfront at the beginning of the application process. The second thing is, if the app is not actually conducting a proper KYC, that is a massive red flag, right? Because only regulated entities can collect KYC, and there is a specified way in which you can do KYC, right? And so if someone just asks for a photo or just for some your address to be filled out or something like that, I think that's an immediate red flag. The third is consent, right? So the regulator requires any lender, digital or physical, to have a terms and conditions upfront when you start the application process, where you give consent to your bureau being pulled, and then you give consent to the terms and conditions of the loans. If these are not there, we often breeze through, you know, clicking these checkboxes, but a customer must read this for a financial product and must see if there is consent to pull bureau. All regulated entities have to pull the bureau. If you do not, that's a telltale sign that this is not a regulated entity. So I think that is a first set of... So I think being able to distinguish between regulated and unregulated lenders is a first important distinction. And a lot of that, unfortunately, onus is falling on the customer, because it's just difficult for the regulator to shut down unregulated entities fast enough. The second is, even in the regulated ecosystem, I think it's very important for customers to be able to spot even regulated entities that are cutting corners. And so I'll give you an example. One of the things that we did at DLAI was actually adopt a code of conduct. And we actually sent a copy of this to the RBI. And our members are required to sign up for this code of conduct. And it's not a abstract document. It actually specifies a set of do's and don'ts on things like collections practices, right? What you can accept on when you're taking a customer application or an app. So for example, contact scraping was a major cause for a lot of the blow up in this whole Chinese lending saga, right? Contact scraping is a strict no-no in our code of conduct as a lender, even if your customer is giving you consent to do that. So we're trying to self-regulate and ensure that there is at least the large percentage of regulated entities are following certain norms and rules. I think this is something that the microfinance sector did quite well in the wake of the Andhra crisis. But I think our submission to the regulator is actually to look at some of these kind of self-regulatory practices and actually consider enshrining them into regulation, into law, because the digital world does throw up a set of new challenges that were not envisioned in the regulations that were built for an analog environment. And so I think certain things like access permissions, how KYC is done, bureau reporting are all need to be fleshed out for the digital lending ecosystem. And we actually believe it's in our interest as lenders to have clarity on things like this, so that a few bad apples don't spoil the entire industry, which today is making a meaningful impact in the lives of customers.
Oh, that's very interesting. Folks, there you go. From the manufacturer of one of the most popular ways of credit, those are some very important tips for you to keep in mind when you are taking a checkout finance loan or whatever you call it, that when you're on Amazon or let's just say that you have some kind of an app store. I don't know what kind of app stores are there nowadays, but if you're downloading an app and when you're signing up, please read each and every word that comes on your mobile or laptop screen before signing up for it. And please check whether the person who is giving you that money, his name is there on the app, and you should cross-check that with the RBI's list, right? Sashank, the RBI has, like you said, they maintain a list of all the NBFCs who are authorized to give.
It's a public information. It's just one Google check away from verifying this.
Man, come on, guys. I know that technology has made a lot of things smoother. And I know that smooth UX, UI is supposedly a very big feature, but please, you know, don't, please generally don't mess around with your money and your credit track record. So great. Okay. So Chan, so we are done with the credit side, right? I mean, is there anything else that you want to tell our listeners? Any new products on the way? Any new features on the way? Anything that they should look out for? Because I like this, you know, I am a customer of Buy Now, Pay Later. Anything that I should look forward to?
Anupam, I think there are definitely some exciting features that we're looking to roll out. I'll play it close to the chest and hope and would love to get your feedback as you discover them, as you see them on our various partner sites.
Yeah, I hope that I can have you back once these are out, and I look forward to that. So folks, we'll take a break right here, right now, because we are done with the credit part of Capital Float. On the other side of this break, we are going to talk about Walnut. I've always wanted Walnut on my podcast, and I'm thrilled to have Shashank here for that. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. And welcome back to this episode of Paisa Vaisa. My guest, Shashank Rishyasringa, MD and co-founder at Capital Float. On the first part of this episode, we spoke about the Buy Now, Pay Later product that Capital Float has. And if you guys don't, I mean, you know, like we mentioned, Capital Float is among the oldest players in this segment. I'm really thrilled to have them on this episode. So in this second part, we're going to be talking about Walnut. Now, Walnut was among like the earliest tracker apps for managing your expenses, you know, so that you can figure out how to save more, and had a lot of nice features. And then Capital Flow took it over, I think, in 2018. So, Shashank, let's move to Walnut. Just an overview of Walnut for our listeners as the app or the feature stands today. What is it about? And I think more importantly, why is expense tracking so important?
Sure, Anupam. So Walnut is one of the most loved personal finance apps in the country. And very simply, in one sentence, what Walnut allows you to do is have better control over your finances. It organizes all your financial information into a digestible form that allows you to not only track how you are doing financially, but also allows you to plan, make decisions, and access products that could be apt for the financial needs that you're currently seeing. And I think it's been an extremely exciting journey for us at Capital Float to welcome Walnut into the family. And it's starting to be a very core part of our customer experience across all our customers across the country. I'll just walk you through some of the key features that Walnut has. So I think first and foremost, as you said, is expense management. What we see today in India is, on average, most sort of people with a smartphone or tech savvy in cities have at least two bank accounts, right? About 75% actually have a prepaid wallet at some point, right? We've all opened multiple wallets over the years in multiple places. It can become very difficult to actually understand where your money is going and what are you spending on. And so the first thing that Walnut does is give you a 360-degree view of what you're spending your money on, right? It helps you understand all your different expenses. It actually automatically categorizes your expenses into headings such as travel, groceries, entertainment, healthcare, etc. You can actually deep dive into any one of these categories and see where you've been spending money, what has been the frequency of doing it. So for example, when I look at my Walnut app, I see that during the first 6 months of this year, my travel spends completely crashed. During the next 3 months, they went through the roof because I think we were all enjoying trying to at least take some vacations before the second wave came in. Equally, my food delivery expenses went through the roof because we were sitting at home and just ordering from Swiggy and places like that, right? So I think that's one very important feature. The second is budgeting and planning. So what Walnut allows you to do is actually set goals. So let's say, for example, I'm working my way towards buying a certain asset. Let's say it's a two-wheeler. Let's say it's a new fridge or something like that. I can actually identify a goal, and then the app will help me understand how much is safe for me to spend to meet my budget target. So it'll actually help me set a monthly savings goal. And then every month, imagine I'm on the 20th of the month, it'll take all my expenses minus my income, look at how much can I actually spend before I breach my savings goal for that month. So it's called a safe to spend feature. And you can actually have this pop up right on the top of the app so that it's always top of mind for you. So today, for example, I could open my app and see that my safe to spend is 5,000 rupees. This is my budget for the last 4 days of March, right? If I want to reach my long-term goal. And I think this has been a extremely popular feature with our users, because kind of goal-oriented financial management is very hard to do, but once you do it, it becomes very addictive because you actually see the benefits of being able to convert those savings into purchases and lifestyle enhancements. The third thing we do is actually give you a one-stop shop to remind you on all your various bill payments. So if you see in India over the last few years, a number of payments you have to make is actually exploded, right? So you have your utility bills, your cable bill, your internet bills. Now people will have Netflix and insurance premiums, you know, and a person could have 10 different recurring bills that are coming up every month. And as you know, the challenge of being late on any of these is high, right? UPI apps like Google Pay and Phone Pay have made it very easy to pay these bills, but how do you track them in one place? And so one of the things Walnut does is really help people track all these bills, ensure they're on time, ensure that they're not running late on their credit card bills, for example, and just manage all your monthly obligations, EMIs, etc., without ever missing something because you just forgot or made a mistake. A feature we actually added when COVID started is a very interesting one. It's called an income tracking feature, right? So a significant portion of the Walnut base is actually self-employed. So you have people who actually work for themselves. As I said, it could be a freelancer or someone who runs their own business. And what happened in COVID is obviously this income became even more irregular because of the lockdowns and things like that. So this feature allowed customers to see what were their incoming cash flows and track any variability in those cash flows and actually understand what the take had been, you know, at the end of every day or the end of every month in one place on their app. And we saw a lot of appreciation and feedback for this, especially from our self-employed customers, given the huge variability in incomes that hit people who worked for themselves over the first few months of this year. And then finally, I think in addition to their whole host of insights, I can talk to you for hours about them. But in addition to insights, what we've also started to do in the last 2 years is offer products. So today we actually offer a credit facility on Walnut that is sort of what we call money 24/7 when you need it. Once you are approved, you can basically get cash into your account at any time of day or night. Sometimes people use this for health emergencies. People may use this for a personal need. People may use it for a work requirement or a business requirement. And we've seen a huge, a positive reaction to this idea of having this sort of 24/7 credit facility in your pocket where you can get cash at any time. We've recently actually launched insurance. So what we saw is a huge number of people were actually researching health insurance after COVID happened. So in partnership with a few different partners, we've actually launched very simple health insurance features in the app that actually allow customers to get insurance with a few clicks and typically at cheaper rates. We've even got a supersize option where if you have existing health insurance, you can actually supersize it and get a larger cover for your family. That's very useful during these times. And we're using the insights that we see from the app now to actually plan out a series of financial products, either things that we provide or things that we do in partnership with others that can be contextually offered to users at the point of need and at the point when it's relevant to them.
Very interesting. Just one question though. Is this also available on Apple? Because I thought that reading, you know, this is run through I think it's called scrubbing your SMS. So is this still Android or is it on Apple also now?
So this is available today on Android. Very honestly, I think almost over 90% of our TG is made primarily on Android. We are working on an iOS feature down the road, especially with account aggregator, I think starting to come live, but today it's largely available on Android.
Okay, great. Okay, so just, you know, kind of wrapping up things out here, you're among those very I would say unique companies that A, are slightly older than the other crop of newer digital lenders, and B, you're on both sides of the table. You are giving loans and you're managing expenses. So this last one crazy volatile year, any trends that you have seen, anything interesting, any shifts in saving, spending habits, just for our listeners to know, you know, what's happening out there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the first big change is what I shared earlier is a dramatic shift to online, right? This Diwali, we saw 250% higher online shopping than pre-COVID, 2.5x more BNPL usage than last Diwali. And I think that has really powered massive growth for us in BNPL, where we've done over 700 crores over the last year alone.
Wow.
Today, we're nearing almost 2 million customers overall at Capital Float. We probably entered the pandemic with about 500,000. So I think there's been dramatic adoption of online commerce and equally adoption of online credit products. I think the second big trend, Anupam, is customer comfort with the digital journey has become complete, we probably short-circuited a three-year journey to get there. So things like video KYC, applying online, looking at TNCs digitally, any hesitancy that we saw, especially in the smaller towns and cities, is completely gone. Right? We see over 40 to 50% of our inquiries and applications now coming from small towns, and we are live in almost 10,000 PIN codes across the length and breadth of the country. The third big trend has been around financial management. So we saw savings balances actually go up on Walnut by 30% post-pandemic, and those have not actually come down. So I think the mindset towards saving, towards thrift, towards, you know, being kind of careful for a rainy day, I think that's very much going to be ingrained into this generation that has lived through the pandemic. And I think that's going to create some options for some very interesting savings products actually for the ecosystem down the line, as people think more carefully about creating buffer for themselves and their families. I think these are some of the probably the major trends that we've been seeing. I think a fourth secular trend, as I mentioned to you, across all products and apps, has really been the rise of tier two and tier three India, right? I think huge amount of interest coming from the smaller towns and cities. In many cases, actually, COVID, the COVID impact on cash flows was actually lower in some of the smaller towns and cities. So we saw incomes being more resilient, especially among small business owners in places like Coimbatore or Nagpur or Rajkot or places like that. And I think that's also possibly a shift that you will see coming out of COVID, which is small town India may actually be rebounding a lot faster than some of the larger cities where we're seeing even a second wave picking up right now.
Yeah, very interesting. I'm quite intrigued by the fact that you said that savings balances are also going up and at the same time credit is also going up. To me, that sounds like some kind of maturity, that people are also saving more and also utilizing their loans more. What do you think?
I would tend to agree with you, right? And I think the key here is small credit, right? I think people have always gotten into trouble when they're over-leveraged and there's been a frenzy to give large loans to people. I think what we're seeing now is very much sachet-sized credit, right? 5,000 rupees, 10,000 rupees for specific use cases rather than just, you know, credit looking for uses, which is a recipe for disaster. So I agree with you. I think there is a degree of maturity creeping in. And I think our customer base, which is a sort of 2 to 4 lakh segment, typically between 25 to 40, is on the one hand aspirational and looking to improve their life. And on the other hand, is very conscious now that they need a rainy day fund for kind of kid education, retirement, healthcare emergencies, and things like that. So people are really trying to balance the two. And I think looking for tools to make this tightrope easier to walk.
And you'd want that, right? I mean, you know, back in the day, of course, the way that we learned credit was when we got our first credit card on the first job and we blew the entire thing up and we learned about devolving. And then, of course, then we would land up taking a home loan that our parents thrust on us. You would want people to first start with these small things, develop a credit discipline, develop a credit habit, develop a credit score, and then make those jumps into larger products. What do you think on that?
I completely agree, Anupam. I think we were actually probably on an up-leveraging cycle before ILFS hit. And I think the last 2 years have actually been a very good reality check on the sector. I think it's pushed lenders to be more thoughtful and sober about growth and be more measured in how we approach customers. I think it's led customers to be a little more circumspect and do more research around how they want to access credit. And I think most importantly, it's led to people realizing that you need to open up the TAM in India, right? A lot of the frenzy, I think, in the financing space in India was centered around that same 30 to 50 million customer base that we started talking about today. Yeah. And I think the game only really kind of changes when we realize that there is a 200 million, 300 million customer opportunity out there. It's harder to do. It's tougher. It's a longer journey. It's going to take some amount of innovation and grit. But on the flip side, I think it's a fundamentally much, much healthier proposition to go after. And we're actually making a dent in the credit consumption in India rather than trying to give credit to people who already have it.
Yeah, I'd really love to have a separate recording with you just on this next 200 million to 300 million that you're talking about, right? Because people don't seem to realize that the salaried guys are actually the minority out of India's labor.
Yes.
80% of India's labor is informal. 20% is formal. And I think that probably the banks and NBFCs did a great job at getting that 20% of labor into the credit habit, because come on, giving a credit card to a salaried guy is the easiest thing, but giving a credit card to someone who doesn't have regular income, totally different thing. And I hope that you guys do a great job out there. So last question, Sashank, would be that anything new at Walnut, any plans that you've got out there, anything that our listeners can look forward to?
Sure, Anupam. So I think we're pretty excited on a few different fronts. I think first is we are seeing a lot of traction on buy now, pay later. So our real focus is to be able to kind of continue to grow the product and really kind of build a large customer base, so get to about 5 million over the next couple of years. I think that involves not just going after the prime customer base, but actually significantly increasing our share of new to credit, people who don't have credit cards, people who are self-employed, and people who live outside of the top 10 cities in India. So a large part of this goal for us is actually getting these customers into the funnel. I think the second big push for us is really around creating, kind of improving our suite of credit products. So today we have a product for personal use. We have a product for small business proprietors. We have buy now, pay later. We're looking at seeing how we can create more use cases in these products. And I'll come back to you when we have updates on this front. And I think the third thing for us is actually partnering with others in the ecosystem to be able to offer non-credit products as well. So I mentioned to you that we've just started to offer insurance. We're looking at a few other verticals such as savings, et cetera. And we're keen to be able to actually offer customers a one-stop shop for all their financing needs and be able to actually meet different needs at a different point in time. So I would say these are really kind of the three focus areas for us going forward. And we're pretty focused on executing and perfecting what we're offering there.
Anything specific of Walnut? I mean, any future plans? I mean, the obvious one is probably mutual funds. I don't know if you offer them right now, but just routing that through Walnut would make a lot of sense. So anything new at Walnut?
So Anupam, there are a few things in the works.
okay.
Right. As I said, I'd love to surprise you as they come out.
Yeah.
But we have some pretty exciting things that I'll just put it this way: really integrate credit with savings and give customers kind of packaged products that they can use to manage their money and kind of time shift their needs in more intelligent ways. I'll leave it at that.
Nice. I like the sheer amount of language out there on that. But folks, that is a wrap on this episode of Paisa Paisa. My guest, Shashank Rishyasingam, MD and co-founder at Capital Float. Shashank, thank you so much for doing this for our listeners. Hope to have you back soon.
It was a pleasure, Anupam. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And listeners, if you like this podcast, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IBM network. You can listen to us on the IBM Podcast app or ibmpodcasts.com. You can also follow us on our social media. We are IBM Podcasts on Twitter and Instagram. And if you want to reach out to me, I'm your host, Anupam Gupta, B50 on Twitter. And thank you so much for listening to Paisa Paisa.
No material on the show should be considered as financial advice. The material on the show is for informational purposes only. Please consult a financial advisor before taking any investment decision.